The foot is a privilege.
It's never been bigger.
Oh, big atmosphere.
More massive moments.
What about that?
Every massive match.
The energy, the electricity is building.
Massive. Oh. For McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Sunday afternoon, a little bit grey in Melbourne town, but we're going to try and line up for the next couple of hours for you guests. Possibly the best lineup we've ever had on the Sunday run. Right off the top, the general manager of AFL Game Development, Andrew Dillon, will join us to explain exactly what is going on in relation to COVID, where and how games are going to be played. Matty Nix, Adelaide senior coach, as we lead up to the Gold Coast v Adelaide. Xavier Campbell, Essendon CEO. Has that man got a bit on his plate with the COVID situation? Ed Curno will join us. We've got the hot topics. We've got the quiz. We've got the whole lot. And we're a little bit disheveled this morning because I just can tell you right off the top, Duck, someone decided to close both lanes of the freeway between Geelong and Melbourne and sent me through Werribee, which is okay. But you'd think you'd manage the traffic through Werribee a touch better, Duck.
Not good for you, Howie. But,
no.
I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to this game today between Melbourne and the Dons.
Well, that was not the case anymore, Duck. We are Gold Coast, Adelaide.
Oh, sorry. I had a mate's birthday last time. What's happened?
Well, Andrew Dillon will explain what's happening. Good to see you're ready to go. And a nice tight tracksuit pant too, Duck.
Always fitted. Always fitted, you know that.
That's what the young kids are wearing. Nate Brown, you're our fashion icon. What do you think about the tight fitted tracksuit?
Well, he's gone the casual look today. He's got apparently he put Nike on the map ahead of Shane Warne. That's what he says.
Hang on. Did Warney wear footy boots?
No, he didn't. But Duck claims that he put Nike on the map ahead of Shane Warne, and he is Nike head to toe today. He's got the hat. He's got the dry fit top on. Looks like he's been out for a run in the tracksuit pants and the Nike shoes. Have a look at him. And they're all youth 16. That's the funny thing.
It's a very tight, modern look, as opposed to the man who's sitting next to, who's gone more your sort of grandpa Nike style, oversized cardigan set up. Great to see you, Ross Lyon. I say that with respect.
No, that's fine. Nothing wrong with the James Pearce stuff. That's all right.
No. How are you, Rossy? It's been an incredible sort of period on the footy field.
Well, Nike athlete for life. Him and Stephen Silvani and Shane Warne. Rare over there.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. It is.
James Percy is at that footy.
Yeah.
You know how much that hoodie costs?
How much?
Oh. He's not on a coach's wage anymore. We can't afford that sort of stuff.
I looked at it and it was sort of something he got out of the dish rack.
Right. Sort of okay.
We'll get it down the peninsula eventually.
Hey, we are doing a new segment today which involves you, which I'm really looking forward to, where we're sort of going into Ross's life in depth, in detail.
Has that been negotiated into the contract?
It has been negotiated.
I'll just say it for special comments.
It's like all the TV networks at the moment. Everything is being renegotiated.
Everything's on the table.
Down. It's been renegotiated. Down. Jay Clark always looks a million bucks is here. Hello, Clarky. Wow, have you had a busy 12 to 24, I would have thought.
Yeah, been an amazing 24 hours in footy, really, and the ramifications are yet to play out, of course, with Connor McKenna's positive test. We know the game is cancelled today, but there are also significant ramifications for Essendon's next two games against Carlton and then Collingwood also. So we're going to get to the bottom of that and what it could mean for Essendon's next two matches and whether they will be significantly depleted for those games.
Well, there's just so many things to consider. We were calling Essendon-Melbourne today, Duck. So Seven was showing that game.
No,
it's not that game. We are now doing Adelaide-Gold Coast, which all of a sudden is on Channel 7. It's at Metric on both games. So the later game involving Fremantle has to be moved back in time to do whatever you need to do with the stadium, Clarky.
Fumigating.
Is that what they're doing with the stadium?
May as well, I guess.
Well,
it's going to get to the point where all Essendon players self-isolate for 14 days because we saw the vision of training being on Friday.
Yep.
And he's clearly tackling and Adam Saad was there and they're bouncing off other coaches. And so the way I understand it is the incubation period can take days before and you don't even know you've got it. So that would put the whole list at risk.
That's correct.
So hang on, you're telling me there's no such test... There's no such test that even though it's in the
system.
Yes, it's in the system. There's no such test that can pick that up.
Can I just interrupt for a moment? When you're asking Nathan Brown questions about the medical situation at Essendon, I don't think we should progress because we're not experts, Nathan, but the next man in to join us knows all about this stuff. You don't need to speak anymore, Nathan, because you've already wandered into areas that I don't think you really understand.
Well,
but this man...
I understand him fine.
Okay. Well, I think this man understands him a little bit better. The General Counsel of the AFL and General Manager of AFL Game Development. Whether I listen to Andrew Dillon or Nathan Brown, I'm siding on the Andrew Dillon side. He joins us this afternoon. Andrew, wonderful to speak to you. How are you going?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, great to speak with you. I hope you didn't hear too much of Brownie's explanation there. But that is the situation we're all in, Andrew. No one really knows what's going on. You've got as much information as anyone. Can you just summarise the last 12 to 24 hours for us before we start looking at what happens next? Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Look, and it's, I think it's relatively well documented, but what we've got is Essendon player Connor McKenna, who has tested positive to coronavirus, and that was... he had an irregular test on Friday, and then that was followed up with a test yesterday, which did say that it was positive. So the playing group at this stage are in isolation. And what Essendon are doing with the AFL is working really closely with the Department of Health and Human Services to now establish who are the close contacts of Connor McKenna. And then we'll work with them then to see who will be identified as a close contact, and then what that means in terms of further testing and periods of isolation.
So what constitutes a close contact, Andrew? Is it someone who has touched Connor or someone who's used the same gym equipment as Connor? What does that mean, close contact?
Yeah, so there's a definition that sort of applies to everyone, and it talks about being sort of in a face-to-face meeting in for 15 minutes, you know, sort of a one-on-one, or being in a indoor period for a period of at least 2 hours. So that's sort of that's your general definition. What we'll be doing, and Essendon will be doing, is working with DHHS and seeing how that general definition applies to the Essendon Footy Club and footy clubs in general, and the circumstances we have here. And then we'll do that to identify who the close contacts are.
That's worrying for Essendon, isn't it? Connor McKenna trained with all of his teammates outside session on Friday, and then had a small group training indoors in the gym with, I think, 8 other teammates. So if you're saying that anyone who's been indoors in the same confines for up to 2 hours could then have to isolate for 14 days, I think that raises the scenario where a chunk of Essendon players are going to have to isolate for the next 14 days. They've got games coming up against Carlton and then Collingwood, Andrew. Would it be your plan to still play those games, even if multiple Essendon players were unavailable?
Well, I think what we'll do is work with DHHS to identify who they are, and then we'll look at how many players there, if any, who are required to isolate. But in terms of the way the AFL rules work, and it's contemplated in numerous scenarios, as long as Essendon's got 22 players and 4 emergencies that are available, then they'll be playing. We've had scenarios like that at the back end of seasons where teams with a number of injuries, players have gone in for surgery, where they've had 25, 26 players available and they've played, and that's what we'd be doing.
Andrew, given that Connor just got back from Ireland and he self-isolated, did all the right things as we know, do you have any idea where he may have picked this up?
No, it's a good question, Wayne, and that's something that the Department of Health and Human Services will be doing in talking with Connor and sort of backtracking from the positive test for a period of hours. I think they go back 48 to 72 hours. So whether it's in that period of time or whether it's something that's he's had for a while, we just don't know, and I'd be speculating otherwise. But that's something that the people who are more expert than Nathan Brown and I will work out.
that's Dr. Brown, actually, Andrew, epidemiologist. So we believe that he attended a home open, and that is a significant area of investigation. If that was the case, would that be breach of AFL protocols?
Look, I haven't got any credible information about what Connor's done between the tests. And to be honest, at this stage, what we're concerned about, the priority really is the health and the welfare for Connor and his teammates. And so we're just dealing with that at this stage. If it's next week or the week after where we have to look into that, we'll do that. And that'll be part of the investigation that DHHS do anyway.
So there's further testing, Andrew, and there's maybe 6 or 7 Essendon players who do have coronavirus, and obviously they don't go on to play Melbourne like they don't today and maybe Carlton next week. Has the AFL got a contingency plan later in the season where they jam these games in once everybody's healthy again?
Yeah, look, I think the terms have been used a fair bit by the AFL this year and the clubs is that, from the start, we've said we're going to have to be flexible and agile. So we will look at, and the reason why we've had shortened quarters and we've got a 17-round season and we're only releasing the fixture in blocks is to provide that flexibility. So I can't sit here today and tell you how it will work or when it will work, but what I do know is that we've got the flexibility and we've got the time to be able to do that.
So how are the negotiations going with the very tough Premier, Mark McGowan? Because I would imagine this is a blow to the AFL's hopes of trying to ease some of those border restrictions. You're looking at flying at least two Melbourne clubs over to be in a Perth hub for a number of weeks, Andrew. How are you going to pick those clubs? And is there any chance that the WA government, you think, will ease some of those restrictions?
We've been having really productive discussions with the WA government and also the police commissioner and the chief health officer over there about the WA clubs when they return from Queensland, and also how we might then work through with the Victorian, you know, Victorian or non-Western Australian clubs playing over there. Those discussions are ongoing, and they don't necessarily rely on border restrictions because there's different ways of quarantine and things like that. And I think we'll just continue to have those discussions. The testing regime and the protocols that we've got in place put us in really good stead, because we are able to, if there are issues, we're able to identify them quickly.
So a couple of teams have already played the WA clubs, like Richmond and Melbourne, so they wouldn't be going over. But would you have to pick some of those clubs out of a hat? Does Gil McLachlan got to get his baseball cap? You rip up all the bits of paper and put it in, pull out two. Is that how that would work?
Look, it's a good question, but I'm not sure how that will work. But there's a whole heap of different combinations of and stakeholders that are involved when we're trying to put the fixture together. And there's different types of travel that are going to have to happen, you know, to South Australia. There might be games, you know, later in the season played in the Northern Territory or down in Tasmania, and some teams will have to travel up to the up to Queensland. So I think in the overall scheme of things, there'll be they'll all get taken into account when the fixture's been done.
When will we know the results of the Essendon players' tests? Could it be as late? If they get tested on Tuesday, will we not know until? Could we still be in the dark Thursday morning about how many Essendon players or officials are indeed positive, Andrew?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that we'll take the advice from DHHS, because I think, you know, people have been saying, why don't they get tested straight away? I think what we'll do is work out when's the right time to test the players, and then we'll take it from there. And I think it's important to note that just because one person has coronavirus and they might have trained in a group, it's not a definite that will have even been passed on and that any of them have got that. And so we're just working on the basis that we'll follow the advice from DHHS and we'll test the players at the right time, and then we'll get the we'll just work through it in a methodical way with DHHS and the Essendon Footy Club.
How much sleep did you get last night, Andrew?
I actually slept quite well by the end of it, but it was an interesting afternoon.
Oh, mate, Travis Old, who's in charge of the fixture, doesn't have much hair left these days, Trav, but by gee, he must be tearing it out at the moment.
Well, I think he's got a fair bit to think about, Trav, but and I think I said it before, is that what we have got with the way the season's been set up, even having the shorter quarters, which some people were, you know, maybe questioning even as late as sort of Saturday morning. I think the reason for those things are maybe coming to the fore now, and what they do is give us the ability to get the season away and do it in a way that's fair for everyone.
Andrew, thanks for your considered and accurate responses. We appreciate you coming on. I know it's a busy day for everyone and you and the AFL.
No, thanks for your time, guys.
Thank you, mate.
Great to speak to Andrew Dillon, the General Counsel, General Manager of AFL Game Development. He's a smart chap.
Succinct and to the point. And he is. Just very, very good. Very good.
I like that he wants in for a bit of assistance though, Brownie.
How well, I could have told you what he told you, to be honest. He's very, very good. He did a good job.
I'm much clearer. So let me get this right. So we're not, Melbourne and Essendon are not playing today.
Gold Coast, Adelaide at 3:05 today, Duck, which is good because we've got an hour and 40 minutes to get everyone on track.
Howie, just got a quick question for Ross on the back of that. So quite clearly, Andrew Dillon said that the AFL wants to continue to play games with Essendon, regardless of how many players go down. So as a coach,
it'd be a certain number, though, wouldn't it? Like if two or three went down, if it was 10, they couldn't play.
Well, no,
he just said if you've got 26, 22 and 4. Yep.
So how many would you be? How many would you be?
Well, we know it's about the quality. We know it's about how many out of the 22 that played in Sydney last weekend. Are you happy to lose 10 or 15 of them? I think it's at any cost at the minute. The season's going ahead, as long as we've got availability, and I understand that, and there's financial ramifications, but the integrity of the competition is a big challenge at the minute. As coach, you're stressing, We saw Dustin Martin. As much as Richmond in the first 5 minutes, you thought, can't lift their legs here. They look a bit off. And where's Dusty? But as you lose quality, there becomes a tipping point.
Mm.
Five, six, weight of numbers. I think once it gets to seven or eight, it's a really compromised. And teams that are fully fit and available will be licking their chops. It's a real concern. But this could go either way. I think there's a scenario, if it's really virulent, Essendon, I think he said it could be none or it could be all of them.
Yep.
There's a worst-case scenario.
You have to think those eight people that he did the weight session with would be spread across young players, forwards, back. So there might only be one or two senior players who are available for selection from that eight. They'd be mad to have...
I think it's their whole back line, Brownie.
Did he not do their full session?
I think they do. They split it up.
Whole back line back line together. Okay. Shouldn't they be smarter than that?
So let's be glass half full.
Yep.
Let's say none of them have got it. None of them test positive, Brownie.
Yep.
Then what?
We're back on, Duck.
No, we're back on, and then it also suggests that, you know, we're maybe turning this into something.
You're saying we're overreacting.
Maybe we are. If none of those guys, if he's trained with those guys and none of them have got it, Ross, then I think that'll give us a great indication, Brownie, of maybe, well, you know, oh, boy.
What does baby old boy mean? And, like, we've just gone from Andrew Dillon to maybe old boy.
Can I just, we are going Australia-wide. A mate of mine, Spriggers, just...
personal shout-outs now, is it? Hello, just Spriggers. Anyone else you want to say good day to?
He's listening in Adelaide.
Boy. Right.
Who have no cases.
Right.
And I'm thinking of moving there.
Right.
Because they can do more.
So they had eight players from their defensive unit in the one session. I would have thought that they would have spread it out to make sure that if someone was tested positive, that those eight players don't all play in the same area.
And for example, Collingwood's midfield group, superstar midfield group, they all trained together as well, believing that they wanted to focus on the cohesion and synergy rather than split up. Brisbane did that. Two midfielders, two defenders, two forwards.
Just in case.
And my third cousin travelled to Italy 6 months ago as well.
Time for a break, I think. We've gone from Andrew Dillon.
That party last night.
Well, from Andrew Dillon, the best guest we've ever had, to Duck saying, and
Oh boy.
That's his explanation of Corona.
My mate in Adelaide.
I thought you started badly, but he's giving shout outs and dropping in, wow, oh boy. Matty Nix to join us next. Ross, when I invited you on this show and said it's upbrow, highbrow, it's upbeat, I'm sorry about this.
It's okay, Howie.
Now on the line, a man who has a big job today, the senior coach of the Adelaide Footy Club, joins us, Matthew Nix. G'day, Matty. How are you?
Afternoon, guys. Going well, thank you.
It's been an interesting 24 hours. Before we get to your game today, which is obviously all your focus is on, how do you go about preparing a footy club and a footy team, not in relation to what we've seen in the last 24 hours, Matty, but in relation to the uncertainty when yours is normally such a structured, process, organised environment?
Yes, it adds a complexity that we haven't seen before. But we're all in the same boat. I mean, every club's going through the same things. We're training in smaller groups. Look, at this point, there's been pros and cons with the way we've had to go about it. Some of the pros have been the detail that you're able to spend with those smaller groups. Cons, I guess, against that are the connection. When you're seeing, how teams connect 22 players in a game, whether you're seeing that flow in games at this point in time. But it's been a challenge, but at the same time, we've all dug in and I think we're all accepting of it, and we've been reasonably flexible that we understand things are going to change as the environment changes.
Tumultuous week for the whole footy club, really. You'd be aware of Mark Rusciuto's comments earlier in the week that have been talking point of the whole week, Matthew. What was your reaction to those?
Yeah, there's a fair bit of media around about that. I mean, from a footy point of view, we're getting business as usual. We've been doing some really powerful work with our group, a lot of learnings, especially out of a showdown where, we underperformed and we were nowhere near where we wanted to be. All credit to our opposition, who are obviously playing some really good footy, but we allowed them to do that. So, from an outside point of view, or a person looking in from the outside, there's, disaster, tumultuous, whatever it was, we're nowhere near that. I mean, we, as a playing group, we're in a really good space. We'll take a lot out of last week, the education around how we need to get better. We're looking forward to today because it gives us an opportunity now to write that. There were some key areas of our game that we let ourselves down in. We'll be focusing on those today and moving forward.
So just to be clear, Matthew, were you comfortable with what he said about former players Mitch McGovern, Jake Lever, etc.?
Look, it's not really something I need to comment about. It's external to footy. I have no issue with Roo expressing he's a passionate, former player from our club. He's passionate about where the club's at. People are talking about the detail of what he went into. It's not for me to comment on at this point.
So, Matty, Ross Lyon here. Just follow on with what Jay said. It doesn't affect you and you don't want to comment on it, but your players will be talking about it. You've had a number of issues. Have you seen fit to address them and put it on the table? Because I know we want to focus on footy, but at the end of the day, distractions get in the way of things. Have you or your footy operations manager, your CEO, addressed your player group with what happened during the week and even previous incidents?
Yeah, look, Ross, of course we have. I mean, there's no hiding from the media in Adelaide and their passion for football. Our supporters and our members are a very passionate bunch, as are Port Adelaide's and the state itself. They love their footy. So
what's the message to the players then?
I look at our players, we're head down, go to work. What we're looking at from if you talk about a head coach, head of footy, obviously there's some factors that come into it going forward. How are we going to attract staff? How are we going to attract players to our club? There's a number of different things we look into. But Ross, at this point in time, as a head coach, coming off a showdown loss like we did, there are priorities that we put prior to that. Our playing group are well aware of what's going on externally. We'll always have those conversations with them, and they're very open and honest conversations about where the group's at.
Yeah, good. So, you know, the interview, like you sit down and you would have had your view on Adelaide and they had their view. Has your view changed once you've got in there? And do you think it's an aligned view publicly and internally as a football club where you're at and where you're heading? And do you think maybe that needs to be done to take some of the pressure off?
Yeah, Ross. We had extensive conversation throughout the process of, applying for the job. There's obviously a lot of questions come from the club to me on where I see the club at. I'm sure they did that throughout their process with a number of different people. What came out of that was, my questions, my answers to some of their questions were, where are we going to go heading forward?
Yeah. Yes, where did they see themselves?
Well, look, it was about moving on and getting better. Where do we need to get better? Now, we've done a hell of a lot of work at this point on what does the future look like for the club? What do we want from our players? What's our philosophy as far as an overall club goes? What are we going to be about? And we've put in place a lot of that work. Now, unfortunately, as it sits at this point, as you guys are pointing out, there's a fair bit going on away from the footy club as it sits at this point. Ex-former players coming out and making comments. They're not making comments on as it currently sits. We're doing a lot of work with our former players, and we have been now for 6 months on how do we bring that passion back, bring that history in, that experience in, and work with our playing group. Because we've got a really strong history and some individual players that had super talent that we want to get back in and learn from. So as I said before, Ross and guys, it's externally it can look like, oh my God, they're so far away. You're never that far away. And we're doing a hell of a lot of work to get ourselves back to where we know we can be.
Matty, we appreciate your time. Not a typical pre-game interview, but you handled yourself absolutely brilliantly, and the footy club's very lucky to have you. Thanks for having a chat with us.
Appreciate it, guys. Cheers.
You know what, Howie? It's never as bad as it seems, and it's never as good as it seems, Brownie.
And they're a great football club in their own right, Adam.
They're a great example.
Are they, Ross?
Well, they have been.
Are they now?
They have been. No, but they can be. Like anything's possible. But
like Matty just said, though, Jay, like he just said, like we sit from afar. We're making an opinion from outside the four walls. He's inside. Mm. Yeah. So, I said, it's never as bad as what it seems.
They've got work to do, but they can be. They're well-resourced.
They're a great
club. The state's behind them. I like club.
Powerful.
Rusciuto, I think, got it wrong in his timing, but he's used to lifting that footy club on his shoulders and let's go. So what I would like to see out of that is a strategic placement of the message. Take the pressure off Matty
rebuilding.
Nicks. It's not clear because you look at them, they've got 10. I'd like to say they come out, this is what we're doing. This is our time frame. This is our strategy. We've learned from the past. We have learned from it. We've acknowledged it. But we don't need to keep going back. This is our way forward. And if you've got a problem with our way forward, well, let's hear it. But enlighten the public and the football world. Here's our strategy and here's our...
Because they're not doing that at the moment, are they?
Well, I think it bits and pieces, but I would love a strong statement.
Clarity. This is clearly a rebuild. This is clearly a rebuild. The list they're putting out at the moment and the amount of players and those players that have gone, it's clearly a rebuild with how many young players they have got in this list. And I think there's a few more senior players that will probably exit that footy club at the end of the year.
But you don't want to cook them all. I remember Fremantle, when they did the rebuild, they said, right, McFarlane, Pavlic, Sandilands, Mundy, they're absolute stars quality. We're keeping them no matter what, and we're going to build around them. And that's what they did. And I think they've got to say, who, like Sloan, you've got to keep him. That quality and build around them, because you need those people to bring their young players through. And I think they can do it, but I'd like him to articulate it from the president or CEO down.
You look at their list and go, Duck, I look down their list at the moment. Yeah. How many of those players do you look, and we've just named Rory Sloan, are absolute keepers that at the end of this year, Adelaide go, nah, like those four players that Ross mentioned at Fremantle, we need to build our club around this list. Is there too many more than Rory Sloan?
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the from the premiership to the year after, and even the year after, a lot of people were saying they'll bounce back and they'll finish top four if you looked at their list. And you now look at their list and you say, wow, you know, how wrong did we all get it? And for what it's worth, I love what Mark Ricciuto said, by the way, and he didn't say anything that a lot of people don't think or agreed with, and all of the figures that he gave had already been written in the paper by many journalists prior, and everyone was saying, "What? How dare he bring up a monetary amount?" Journalists do it every week.
But it's got to be strategic and coordinated. That's the issue.
He's unfortunately for Rupert, is he? No, because he's a director and he works in the media. So that's the tricky part of what he's, and that's maybe where people have got their nose out of joint. But in terms of what he said, I have no problem with it.
This is bizarre.
And there's something strange happening tonight.
O'Meara one step, does it bounce through? I think they've got another one, the Hawks. This is four straight. They are right on top of Richmond at the moment. Liberatore is going to have the set shot. He's got 15 giants sledging him from right beside him as Liberatore lines up. You wait if he kicks it. Now it's on. The Dogs come from everywhere. The Giants drop their heads. They've got to walk away. And now it's on again. The Giants want to get involved. Players are coming from everywhere.
There's punches being thrown. Look at it.
Parker inside 50. Blakey on the left. Sydney, you got another one.
Five in a row, Jim.
Now he finds Dangerfield, who's coughed it up. Mitch McGovern from 49 sets sail and puts it through the middle.
A famous back to the wall victory for the Hawks. They were terrible last week. They've come to the MCG and routed the reigning premiers.
There's the siren. And the Dogs get their first win, season 2020.
And Sydney have won this game of footy by 11 points, deservedly so.
Blitzars there, Henry. They're back in the centre, the Cats. They've got to go almost the length of the field.
Eddie Betts.
Eddie Betts with a ripping tackle. That's holding the ball.
And the siren sounds here at GMHBA Stadium. It is a famous victory for the Carlton Footy Club.
Great package by Matty. This is the Triple M Sunday Rub for McDonald's. Triple M at Rocks Footy. Mark Howard, Nathan Brown, Jay Clark, Ross Lyon, Wayne Carey. Upsets, the Hawks with an upset, the Dogs with an upset, the Swans with an upset, and the Blues just with an upset last night, Brownie. Jay-Z, we need to talk footy and what's going on with the Cats, but can I just say, I'm going to hijack this for a sec. Eddie Betts had a quiet week last week. Jeez, he was good last night, Ducky boy, and then got it off half back, couple of tackles, then forced the turnover on the half forward line. How good was it to see Eddie in the navy blue jumper? And for Blues fans, they wake up today going, yes, there's
he's one of those guys you pay money to go and watch.
Yes.
He? When he's on, brings, well, the crowd wasn't there, but people love to watch
Kicked
Eddie.
Kicked the first goal of the game as well, got him going.
Yep.
Kicked a really important goal. I think it was in the third quarter. Yes. Left foot snapped that kept the momentum going.
And gave off about
three.
It was
four efforts in the middle. Geelong were going to win that game. They kept putting it inside forward 50 and four efforts for Eddie Betts. The tap on, then the tackle, then the smother, and then the tackle again. And that was game over.
I think someone came up with a stat yesterday, and we'll chat to Chew Man a little bit later when he's in and find out. But I'm led to believe since they've been taking stats, and that's from 99
goal
onwards,
assists.
He's the number one goal assist player
ever.
Ever from 99.
And I'd been one.
But not ever.
I'd been
from
off 99. Off Eddie a little bit. It had dried up. I think there was one game he kicked six or eight last year, but then it was one in the next nine.
Both of those were Gold Coast too.
And both of them were Gold Coast. So was a bit in. I was a bit off in context where Carlton were at. Are they rebuilding a 35-year-old? But he looked sprightly. But some defensive aspect come back into his game. That tackle at the end and early, he was up and about, wasn't he? He was working hard.
I haven't seen a club kick the footy like Carlton did last night all season. It was sublime. It was 30-metre passes and Geelong were just carved up. And that, a lot's got to be said about Geelong's defensive pressure last night because it wasn't anywhere near what it was against Hawthorn. But Carlton were able to foot skills, which they haven't been known for. They've been actually known to butcher the footy, and that's what set their win. 42 points up at one stage.
It's just, another great example of if you think that you're ahead of the game in this competition, it just shows you how close
the game is,
and exactly that, and preparation. Now, I'm not taking anything away from Carlton, but clearly Geelong went into that game thinking they were just gonna win.
Or expectation. Carlton, expectation first 2 weeks, go down, no one expects us to win. It's that mental toughness being able to handle So Gold Coast today, there's an expectation on them. Playing West Coast, no pressure, but pressure today. So, and then you're right, the ability of Geelong at home thinking it's going to happen, or expectation to win. The mind plays funny tricks on you.
They're able to, Carlton, take marks in the forward half. He talked about the kicking brownie. Doherty was exceptional there, but they're able to get through that Geelong defence, which has been such a strength of their game for such a long time. So well done to Carlton. He spoke about the first quarters last week, Ross, and they were good early. But the other side of this coin is really interesting because Geelong lose and haven't won back-to-back games since June last year. So that is a full 12 months of win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. And we'll have a listen to Geelong coach Chris Scott right now because he seemed pretty jack with that.
I don't often talk to the players post game, but I did today. It was a lot of people talking in the room, and there's no clear answers, I don't think, except that we do have a problem. That's clear. It's been clear for a long time.
What would that be, Ross?
Not kicking enough goals.
That's why he's the master coach. That's why he led Freo and secured a grand final.
Yeah, no, in all seriousness.
That's a trend, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
You would acknowledge
you
that.
But the players have got to own it. The players have got to own it. What changes Monday to Friday to determine your performance? What I used to talk about a bit with the player group was what you learn is somewhere in their preparation, it's changing. They've got to go back and every individual's got to look at it and collectively and say, what changes on a weekly basis? And they might think nothing, but it could be, and sometimes it's the simple things of mentally getting you ready, like you'll do your ice baths and you'll do your massage, or, oh, yeah, this week I won't do it. So, you know, great is every player every time. Good to average is most players most time. So there might be Selwood. I'm not changing my prep, but somewhere someone's changing their prep. That's my view on it. And they're going to have to dive in and individually reflect on themselves and say, what can I do to get to the line? And Chris said it. Anyone that watched that didn't see bodies flying. The intensity wasn't there for what was at stake. And that'd be the most – I saw a bloke second-guessing handballs and being casual, whereas the Blues were on. But they've got to ask themselves, why did we stick our tackles and win clearances this week when we didn't do it last week? Somewhere it's in the prep and the mental prep generally.
Well, and by the way, we don't know what individual players are thinking, but clearly for me, from an outsider looking in, those – particular players, and there'd be some, as you said, the likes of Selwood and these guys, they just do what they do every week. But there are others that went into that game quite simply thinking, we have got Carlton at home and we are going to win. Whereas going in against Hawthorn, which they have a great rivalry with, they prepared mentally completely different. Mental game, not physical.
So what you're saying, Ross, is if 5 players come with a different mindset from the week before and they haven't done exactly what they did the week before, but there are 18 or 17 guys who have, which is yourself, which is Dangerfield, Harry Taylor, I imagine, does the same thing every week. Those 5 players who haven't done it, there's a flow-on effect that affects the whole team because of those 5 players.
Yeah, and Aussie Rules is a weakest link game, not a strong... So team that makes the least errors and has the most players contributing wins the game. It's pretty simple. It's not a basketball court where 5 and one player dominates. It's the weakest link game.
You nailed it. I've always said that, it's what you get out of your bottom 4 that invariably wins you a premiership.
So how does that apply to the Sunday Rub team, Ross? So if Ducks had a big night last night, how does...
we clearly have to step up and carry it.
Can I ask, why does everyone just assume, because it's a Saturday night. But I've done something.
You came in and you said you went to a party and you had a big night.
Your friend.
I actually didn't say that.
Exactly Sherlock Holmes to figure that out.
By the way, if I say I've had a party, what's to say that it wasn't a tea party? Why does it have to be a
probably 20, 30 party years
party?
We know you pretty well.
Duck, they didn't put you on the front of the Herald Sun with 27 cups of tea. Shortly to join us, the CEO of the Essendon Football Club, Xavier Campbell. A little bit later on, Ed Curnow. And the CEO of the North Melbourne Football Club, Ben Amafio. That's all still to come game time at 3:05.
We ran into Xavier a few times over the break.
Did you?
And he was pounding the pavement around the tan often.
A fit-looking man.
Yeah. You know what? Impressive man, Xavier.
Well, he will join us.
Could he keep up with you, Doug?
Hey?
Could he keep up with you?
I was power walking.
No running for
with
you.
My little weight and going down the hill, Brownie.
With your little weight.
I'm joking. When you walk, there's a certain way that you walk the tan, Ross.
Anderson Street.
You don't walk up the hill, you walk down the hill, and there's a reason for that, because the traffic's coming.
The car traffic, no.
Yes.
Right, I've got you. As he said at the start, oh boy. Now, new segment time, Jay-Z. We always get excited on the Sunday rub when it's time for a new segment. And the production team have got together and made us a nice little opener.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
The Sunday rub heads into the Lion's Den.
Potentially the best part of the segment, I reckon, that, Jay-Z. Well done again to Matty. Rossi, what do you think your opener first up?
I'm going back to coaching.
We've got you here, mate. You've had an incredible run in VFL, AFL football. And we did a bit of this with Roosie, which was always nice, Brownie and Duck, and we enjoyed it, Jay-Z, mm-hmm. where we delve into certain areas. So each week we'll pick a certain topic, whether it be coaching, footy, et cetera, et cetera. Incidents that you've been involved with. We'll get to the St Kilda Grand Final later on as the season goes on. But we thought we'd start with your very first game of VFL football.
It was VFL back then.
VFL football. So when was it, and what are your memories going into it?
They're actually reasonably clear. It was against Collingwood at Vic Park, 1985, I think it was, round 18.
So how long had you been at Fitzroy at that point?
I was 18. I played under-19s at 16, reserve 17, and then had a cartilage out. And then I was there all year, but I had a groin injury. I hardly played, and then...
What was it like when you first walked into the club as a 16, 17-year-old? Who were the stars at Fitzroy then?
Well, because it was under-19s, and the clubs were amazing. So it was zones. It was Reservoir Split, the railway line. One side was Collingwood, the other side was Fitzroy. And Paul Ruse and Oswald, they all came out from Doncaster Templestowe. But they used to have taxis pick us up, do the taxi run, I think north as well. So four kids in the area, there'd be two taxis from Reservoir, eight, and... It'd be a great trip down to the Lakeside Oval, which is a bit of fun. And so you used to, and they were a really strong team. North were a strong team. I think they won the premiership with Doug Searle in 83. And Roosie and Purdy had come through. Purdy was playing senior footy at 16. So we had a lot of fun. And then from there, you get an opportunity to do pre-season and get elevated to the senior list.
And was pre-season like running around with bricks in your hand and all that type of stuff?
Oh, no. It was very solid pre-season your first. Robert Walls' coach, so it was nowhere to hide. And I was a kid, and they'd played in a prelim in 83, so in finals 84 as well, I think. I'm not too sure, but a prelim in 86. But I remember one pre-season, it was one-on-one for about 30 minutes, and then they had a drill called the channel at the Fitzroy. It was really just the 3v3, the length of the ground, full contest. And at the end of it, I was throwing up, and Robert Walls walked past me. He said, son, don't eat pies for lunch. I thought, mate, everyone's too scared to eat before they went training. So it was pretty, it was solid, you know.
So round 18, 1985, Fitzroy v Collingwood, Duck of Victoria Park. Fitzroy went into the game ninth on the VFL ladder out of 12. Collingwood was sixth. Fitzroy had just lost to Hawthorne the week before by 72 points. Ross was 18. On debut, and we have a little bit of audio of the match now.
First of all, let's go to Victoria Park. And at the park this afternoon, it was the battle of the co-tenants, Collingwood and Fitzroy.
This kick doesn't go anywhere.
short pass comes into Conlon. Conlon's going to go into the open goal. Taken here by Turner. He hooks it back toward Little Lion. Charged the Lion, who is being held, and what a great start. It's in the matter. And there's a mark for Lion. He kicks a goal, so he played on.
Halfback flank. Troy have proved too good for the Magpies, 14-21, 105 to Collingwood, 14-10, 94.
Little Lion, 11 kicks, 4 marks, 6 handballs, 3 goals too if you don't buy Nathan
three goals
debut.
Too. What a debut by Ross. Were you number 29 on debut as
well? Yeah, I was 29, Gary Wilson's number. Sort of let him down for the next 10 years. That's okay.
So what
I
your memories?
I thought I kicked 4, it was only 3.
Well, you did tell me on the phone during the week it was 6, but when we did a bit of analysis. So you kicked 3, what are your memories of your
first
game?
My first kick was a goal.
Was it?
I remember that, AFL footy.
And oh, talk
I,
us through
I
it.
I think I kicked, it fell in my arms. I think I cut across the pack and... A little bit of mud around at Victoria Park, but the Collingwood faithful were there, that grandstand. And I was really nervous. I actually remember Matty Rindell's pre-game. You blokes are nervous. You blokes are quiet. Get some urgency about you. And I was thinking, mate, I'm ready to go. You know, so Matty was quite funny. And but you just, I remember thinking, there was a car park in the school out the back. How do I get in there? How do you find the rooms? You're really quite nervous. And then, first kick, it just sort of floated through. How it went through, I'll never know. But there was a couple of things. I was on the Bionic Man. Greg Smith had come from Sydney. They used to call him the Bionic Man. And
why?
He had the shoulders. He kept playing with the dislocated shoulder. He's a pretty good player. But he didn't go anywhere near me. I kicked a couple, and that Greg Phillips had just gone in. Who's on this little rat picking up? I was thinking, it's me.
So some of the players you played with, is Bernie Quinlan playing still then?
Yeah, Bernie Quinlan. So my first 5 games, I played a forward pocket alongside Bernie Quinlan. And they all just double-team him, and I just had plenty of free reign.
Just footy smart.
Yeah, well, not smart. I was just lucky, I think.
What about the his name escapes me. He wore the maroon tights as well.
Oh, yeah, Reeves.
Yeah, why did he wear them?
Michael Reeves. I think they said he used to be a bleeder with the Corkies. But one thing I do remember at Victoria Park, we were in front and they were coming back, the Ricky Barham wing. Ricky Barham got the ball and started bouncing down in front of the members and they just roared. And I remember just looking at this, thinking, how good's this? And then after the game, you still had the drink and the sandwiches and the party pie. With the team and the umpires went in. I look back on it, it was like special times. You know?
And what was Woolsey? Can you remember anything about Woolsey? Did he pull you aside in your first game? Or?
Yeah, pre-game. More you go for, more you get, son. And I remember any players that do boo for me, I say the same thing. More you go for, more you get. So get after it. And he was great with kids. He really encouraged you to go. And he was a real supporter of mine as well. Johnny Blakey, I think, played the next week after and he went on to become a champion player. So, that was... You look back, and actually a mate of mine that went, he still got the seat ticket that he kept from 1985.
Your debut game.
Yeah, so, it was fun times.
Out of all the coaches, obviously Woolsey was your first, and Parkin and all those guys. Who did you take most from, do you reckon?
Well, I have Robert Shaw, but what Woolsey was a great teacher of football and the game and skills, and he was hard, but... he could really teach you the game. It was David Park, and I was from the northern suburbs. And if you're going okay, I was in primary school, grade 6, and the kids coming from the high school to beat me up. I'd never meet them before because I actually used to get a kick. So you learned to sort of fly under the radar out in the north. And then so you learned not to give your best a little bit in some ways. But David Park, and he was like, be the best you can be, you know. So he wasn't a driver of football education, but he was about dedication and training hard and be the best you can possibly be. So in respect of turning me around and getting my life going, David Parkin had a big influence about the off-field and I went back to uni and did a degree because of him and build your life. So, different mentalities. His was like, be the best you can possibly be, make no apologies for it, whereas I had a bit of that attitude.
What was the degree?
I did a Bachelor of Business in HR and Industrial Relations,
Second game, 1-1. Third game, 2-4. Fourth game, 3-1. So he's got 9 after
two
4.
2-4.
2-4, but 3-1 the next week. Were you? We might speak about Brisbane next week. We won't get into Brisbane now because people won't always realise you went up there. Were you there when pay started to run out at Fitzroy?
Yeah, we went through all that. Roosie and I just had a coffee the other day, spoke when Purdy left. Purdy never wanted to leave and go to Collingwood. They kept losing good players. I played the first game 86 and then I That's another story, but I walked away. We beat Geelong down at Geelong, and they went on and finished third.
What do you mean you walked away?
Well, I sort of quit. I just...
Hang on. You don't just sort of quit and walk away. If you've opened that door, what happened?
Oh, I had the groin injury the year before, and they weren't great. And Parker was fantastic. The club had played in the prelim 83, 84 fell away. Maybe at finals, 85 had a terrible year. Walls and Park and switch clubs, Carlton to Fitzroy. And they'd had a lot of blokes injured in the medical room, and Parkin came in and said, there is no medical room. But, okay, no worries, there's no medical room. So all you did was train. I had a groin, I just trained and trained. And he said, you're going to your break. So I played the first senior game that year, and I had a conduit tendon torn off the bone. And I wasn't the world's best trainer anyway, but we played at Geelong. I think I kicked a couple. We won. I couldn't get around Albert Park Lake on the Monday night. I thought, well, I've gone to a break. I just went and grabbed my bag and went home. So,
what was the plan at that point? What were you going to be doing with
yourself? Well, I saw my mum in the driveway. I had a cry. She said, it'd be all right. My man was pretty hard. He didn't talk to me for 6 months. But and then 2 weeks later, I quit uni and went on the Donald Pump petrol.
So, right.
Yeah.
Where was the petrol station?
Sydney Road. Sydney Road, Brunswick. So that was an interesting experience. My mate was managing it.
So you quit football. You quit playing BFL football. Yeah.
And uni.
He's kicked two goals, quit uni, and then he's pumping gas. Yeah. What were you thinking at this stage? Like, did people recognise
I was thinking,
you?
I'll get to the Lower Penny Club. I'll get to the Reservoir Pub. That's what I was thinking.
So are you thinking about coming back?
No, it wasn't like that. It wasn't. There was articles. You could go back and get the articles. They said I was getting paid out to State Carlton and all that, because Walls had gone across, and that pinched Marcazzani and, Gleeson, I think, down the track, those sort of things.
And Nath brings up a good point, though. What was the general life plan after you quit your job, you quit uni, and you're pumping petrol? Like, what was the next stage at that
just
stage?
Enjoy it, you know? just enjoy it. It wasn't about that. Northern Suburbs, mate, you didn't really think about
it. It's one thing they should bring back, though, pumping gas, because you get to the petrol station and getting out can't work.
Job,
so when old mate from Frio, I can't think of his name. Was it Blakey? Who went? Who
Johnny like, Blakey.
No, Blakey. Who's the Frio bloke that just went surfing when he wasn't meant to and you got
Connor Blakey.
Did you sort of say...
You know, that wasn't me.
Did you say, I know, I've been this. I sort of went pumping petrol at one stage.
I said, Connor, I get it. I walked away. I said, mate, I don't love it. I just got to do it. I got a family to feed. But the ironic thing with Connor Blakey, the leaders come with it. And I said, boys, do you really want to do this? I said, let's just do up our laces. We haven't seen this. And they said, we're doing it.
Let's just do up our laces.
And I said, I'm happy to... No, we've got to do this. I said, all right. And then it'll become... Connor still hasn't recovered this. I'm not thinking it.
Our next guest, well, he's got a lot on his plate at the moment, so we really appreciate him taking the time to have a chat with us. The CEO of the Essendon Football Club is on the line, Xavier Campbell. Good afternoon, Xavier. How are you going, mate?
Good afternoon, Howie. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no, thanks for coming on, mate. I know you've got a lot on your plate. Give us a basic timeline of when you realised that you had an issue with COVID, mate, and obviously we all hope it gets sorted out and your footy club can play footy really, really soon, mate.
Yeah, no, it's something that's obviously, you know, I'm not part of the football department bubble, so I sort of sit outside like a lot of the sort of administrators and CEOs. So I got a call early morning or mid-morning probably yesterday from our head of football, Dan Richardson, our head of people and culture and compliance officer, Lisa Laurie, says to say that a preliminary test result had come back that was pending on Connor and was a little bit strange. It was something that Dorovich, the pathology lab, were further exploring. So the ears pricked up then, and that's when we started to think, okay, what are the different scenarios that can come into play now? And then Connor obviously went off for additional testing, and that confirmed positive test was released mid-afternoon.
So, Xavier, can I just check, did the club know that that first test came back a regular before he came back into the club?
Yeah, thanks, Clark. And that's a question that I've rightly been asked over the last 24 hours. So I'll give you a quick snapshot of the timeline and how it worked. We all know your players are tested twice a week now. The first time is before their contact training session during the week, and the second time 48 hours out before the game. So all the players have been tested on Wednesday before their contact training session on Friday. So they got the results Friday morning, but they were then tested again Friday afternoon. Now, those results didn't come through until early yesterday morning before training. So the process is that the club doctor and the club compliance officer then get those results. They cross-check them against everyone in the bubble, players and staff. Now, Connors was the one that said pending. So it didn't say it was negative. It didn't say it was positive. It said it was pending. So our guys then rang Connor just to ensure that he actually went for the test. He was en route to the football club at the time. He advised that he had. Then the club doctor then made contact with Dorovich, who advised that they would need to explore that and come back to the club. In the meantime, Connor arrived at the football club. He was told that he wouldn't be able to train with the group, and then until such time that we got confirmation of a negative test, he would need to obviously practice strict social distance. He was temperature tested for symptoms and all that sort of thing as per the protocol. And about 15 minutes later, the result came back that there was an irregularity, a low level of irregularity, so it still wasn't conclusive. So then he got sent off straight away off to Dorovich for further testing, got asked to self-isolate at home, and it wasn't until early afternoon that we were advised that the test was in fact positive.
So the concern around the seven other players that he did the indoor session with being Redmond, Hurley, Hooker, Saad, Ridley, Guelphy and Gleeson, what is the situation with those guys?
Yeah, it's too early to tell, Brownie. So basically we had a call earlier today with the Department of Health and Human Services. So essentially what they're doing now is going through a process of identifying those in close contact. So what they're going to use closely and what we're compiling for them now is the footage of training on Friday. So Friday was a full list, full contact training session. So even though there are smaller groups, it does depend on the activity that those smaller groups are undertaking as to whether or not a particular player would deem as close contact. Even when players are doing gym sessions, there's particular protocols that players follow to ensure that they're not deemed as close contact, and that is cleaning the equipment after they used it, all those sorts of things. So I don't want to speculate. I think it would be inappropriate for me to do that. We have to follow the process and wait for, essentially provide all the information through the Department of Health and Human Services and wait for them to come back to us in the next 24 to 48 hours around who is deemed to be a close contact individual.
So, Xavier, the Chief Health Officer, Brett Sutton, has already said any close contacts of Connors would have to isolate for 14 days. You've got two games, obviously, upcoming against Carlton and then Collingwood. How many players would you be comfortable losing to continue to go ahead with those games?
Well, you're not comfortable losing any, Jay. You know, it's going to be challenging. Clearly, we know there's going to be some. It will depend around what the DHHS determine around close contact. It will depend on the AFL as to then what the next step is. All I would say in that is that the AFL have done a tremendous amount of work in building flexibility in a framework for the execution of games, obviously with shorter quarters, a rolling fixture that's coming out in piecemeal stages where you only have 4 weeks, essentially 4 weeks at a time, and a longer runway for a season to be completed in. So regardless of where it sits, and if we, you know, if a worst case scenario was a significant chunk of players were deemed to be close contact and we weren't able to fill the team, there is enough flexibility. I think Gil spoke to this yesterday, enough flexibility in the fixturing and the way the season's going to be delivered to allow us to move through that.
So if you did lose a chunk of senior players, we took of Hooker and Hurley, etc., you potentially asked for those games to be postponed.
Well, we would be led by the league, I think, and they would be resting heavily on the medical experts, and it would depend.
But if you
lost
your back line, Xavier, wouldn't you want to push those games back? If you lost your whole back line, say,
that would be a discussion we have with the AFL, and it would be for the AFL to determine what that looks like. I mean, clearly, you know, we're speculating on what that might look like, and I'm really reluctant to do that given the landscape as it stands right now, but they are all realities. What we do know is it's not going to derail our season, Clarkie, and that's we're determined to ensure that's happening. It's not ideal. We know that. But the preparation and lead into this season hasn't been ideal. It's been anything but fair in the way it's been structured. And there's hubs, there's not hubs for other teams and all those sorts of things. We all know that we're bought in, and we all know we have to play within the parameters that we've got. But given the uniqueness of this season, I think every club's bought into that.
Xavier, before we let you go, I know you've got a lot on your plate, mate. Obviously, in the midst of all this is a young bloke who has already had a discussion that he's suffered from homesickness. He's come back to Australia. He's had to go into isolation for the 14 days due to the fact that he's arrived back into the country from an overseas destination. And now he's got this. How is Connor dealing with all this? He's gone through a lot, the young man.
He has. It's not ideal. I mean, you know, we can't forget that there's a real person behind all of that. So there's a lot of support being provided to Connor in the background. I spoke with him at length last night. He's doing okay, but it's, you know, it's one of those sort of works in progress. We need to ensure we keep checking in with Connor because it's a pretty confronting situation that he finds himself in.
Obviously, that's mentally, but how is he in general?
No, he's doing all right. You're asking physically, Duck, in terms of his football.
Yes, yes.
You know, he's doing all right. Obviously, he'd been chosen to play this week, so you know, even though he'd had an interrupted preparation, even more so than a lot of the other players with the quarantine period that he had to go into, and even just getting back to Australia was a challenge because of the, you know, there weren't direct flights. You know, working out which destinations for him to fly back through that provided the least amount of risk for us. So all those sorts of things, and that's, you know, didn't make for smooth sailing. But you know, he'd come back in good shape. He was prepared and ready to go, and to the level that the match committee felt like they should pick him for this week's game.
And is he actually feeling sick though at all, Xavier?
No, he's asymptomatic.
He's not. No.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's another key. I mean, the AFL have done an enormous amount of work. And I have to commend them. Like, they've done an enormous amount of work around the protocols. You know, every morning when players arrive on site, they go through a rigid test, you know, strict test that they go through to ensure that the risk is reduced. And for Connor, he didn't feel anything. And that's, you know, even though he didn't have his full test result yesterday, he still had to go through that. He still had to stay separate from the group in the sense of respecting social distancing. And that's, you know, that's processes have been put in place and processes have proven to be founded to be correct in the situation that we find ourselves in.
And finally, Xavier, did you discuss with Connor in your talks with him whether he did go to the open house, as has been reported?
Yeah, it's too early to understand. There's an open house. Whether or not that open house is deemed to be a breach of the protocols, we're still working through. It's a decision for the AFL. And now, obviously, the fact that it's with the Department of Health and Human Services is something that we've stepped back from. And we'll allow them to manage that process now, Clarkie.
Mm-hmm. Xavier, we appreciate you coming on. Good luck steering through a difficult time. Hopefully everything is back ship shape very, very soon for you, the Bombers, and for Connor.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, guys.
Great to speak to Xavier Campbell. By gee, the hits keep coming on the show today. There's so much to unpack from that, but again, you're not going to get a better bloke to leave your club in this situation than Xavier Campbell.
Super capable man, isn't he?
He's rock solid, wasn't he?
Andrew Dillon, excuse me, exactly the same. Can I ask you boys just quickly, if he's gone to the open house, would you be comfortable with the AFL throwing the book at Connor, as they said they would do earlier in the year?
No. Is it open house like a real estate situation?
Going to rent a house.
Oh, right.
I think other players have been given a week for flouting those rules. It sounds like that the rule has been flouted.
Can I just say, if he did, and I would imagine, I don't know whether you've been to an open house of late, Jay, but they're not exactly Bourke Street Mall. And if you are social distancing, then I wouldn't think that it's a big deal.
Well, you can go and get a coffee, you can go to a supermarket.
Yeah, so an open house.
On very great.
It's seriously.
Howie's Hot Topics.
Sunday Rub in fine form today for Kotai. This is the Triple M Footy Preview. Whatever you need at Kotai can make it happen. Search Coat Hire today. Mark Howard, Nathan Brown, Jay Clark, Ross Lyon and Wayne Carey. Hot Topics is back. Now, Duck has obviously told one and all that he's doing a lot with Mosh and his hair is growing magnificently and he is very, very happy with that. So the obvious question will be, we'll start with you, Brownie. If you could change one thing about your appearance, what would that appearance change be?
Pretty happy, Hab.
No. If you could change one thing, calves, what would it be?
You know what? No, not my calves, because I like how big my calves are, but I've got this little tooth here, which Jason Dunst always used to call Junior Fang. It's just a little one that doesn't fill out, so I'd like to get that filled in at some point.
That's a good one. Clarky, if you could change one thing about your appearance?
I long for a more complete beard. I got a patchy right cheek, so it's a poor beard, and I long for a better one.
Roscoe?
Genetic or self-induced problem?
No, just the way you're looking today, if you could change one thing.
Self-induced, like, could do a bit more exercise, but... Okay. Well, I actually rang the kids to get their input. It was unanimous, the eyelids, Dad.
What's wrong with your eyelids, Ross?
They look all right to me. What are they? Pull them and they just close. They said it's like you've had a stroke.
It's like you've had a stroke.
Mel would have got the nose, the hair.
That's directly
they got
the
eyelids.
The kids.
Yeah, the kids. Brutal.
What about you, Ducky
well,
boy?
I'd like to encourage everyone out there to be happy with
yes.
who they are.
Yes, of course.
First and foremost, but probably my lower back.
What would you like to change about that,
Ducky? That's all I could come up with.
What about you, Al? Biceps. I just like some. I like some biceps.
I would have started with a nose of yours.
Yeah. Probably been broken a few times. Something could be done there.
Oh, boy.
Always Nath comes in with a nice pair of shoe on. Start with you, Duck. What's the most you've ever paid for a pair of shoes?
Well, given that I put Nike. No, I'd probably only a few hundred dollars.
Okay, Ross. $300. Apparently, you're wearing sharp shoes. What's the most you'd pay for a pair of shoes?
Oh, no. $800, $900?
$800 or $900? What have you paid $800 or $900 for? Not those old things, sure.
Well, the Buttarosa is not far off.
I thought Ellen DeGeneres was in here with
he came in with a pair of Golden Gooses round one, and they topped $700, $800.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple.
Clarkie?
Not much over that.
Oh, Clarkie? Just a humble journalist. So yeah. It's sort of $250, your Italian leather numbers, your brown.
Now, leather. Let's be honest.
You're not getting an Italian leather number for $250.
Yes, you are. Men's Club Richmond. Go see
Bali.
this question
That's
was...
faux leather, mate.
This question was designed for Nathan. So the top bidder at the moment is Ross on $800. Nath, what is the most you have ever spent on a pair of shoes?
I spent about $1,700 on a pair of Balenciagas once, Howard. I've still got them.
You'd want to still have
$1,700.
Oh, I have them. My wife bought them for me, so I wear them because she got them.
Haven't you seen them? They're like, you see the ad in the newspaper, or actually in the aeroplane magazine, of the little guy standing next to the tall girl.
Yes. They've got a thick heel.
It's a real thick heel.
That's how he gets a couple more inches.
Correct. That is a nice shoe. I'm not sure if you guys are aware, Australia's number one sports podcast is approaching its 100th guest this Thursday. If you haven't heard the show, it's called The Howie Games. Guest number 100 on Thursday. Clarkie, if you could sit and listen to a podcast of any athlete or person involved in sport on the planet and you could choose that person, who would you choose to listen to?
You know, John the Bookie.
I do know John the Bookie.
I think if we could have an honest conversation about all the cricketers that were paid off for betting information, we'd have an entertaining half hour.
Mm, sure, Mark War would be happy to hear from John the Bookie. Yes?
George Best.
George Best?
Yes.
He's going to be hard to track down as well.
He is, obviously,
he's no longer with us, but yeah, he would
be
fascinated.
You didn't specify whether you
have
dead or alive.
Fair enough. Roscoe?
Bomber Thompson.
Bomber Thompson.
Not bad.
Bomber Thompson. That's achievable.
What would be your first conversation topic?
Wow. That's a dangerous question. Well, I just think, I know where I'd like to end up, but he's just a fascinating.
There he is.
Nothing but respect for him, but... Mm-hmm. What he's achieved, premiership captain. We know the story. I just think if you could get through the whole lot and just what he's... No one could predict where he's got to.
I mean, 2 weeks ago, he was accused of stuffing his friend in the trunk of
the car. I did read that.
So he's denied that, but that's the sort
that's
of...
That's not an easy topic just to weave into the general conversation, though, Brownie. Yeah.
But he's shut down. We've lost him to footy.
Yep.
It'd be great to get him back into the fold and... I mean, premiership captain, player, coach, successful businessman. The whole
always
lot.
Wonderful to deal with, Bomber. Duck, who do you want to hear from in a sports interview?
It's got to be a sports person?
Well, someone in sport, yes.
Okay. Well, it would have been Ali if he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Tyson.
Tyson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike Tyson.
All right.
Still find him fascinating, very interesting. A man that got in his first fight over a pigeon.
Did he?
Yeah. Someone ripped his pigeon's head off.
Right.
That's how he first got in a fight.
And then poor old pigeon.
Yeah.
Then what happened, Duck?
Well, he beat the guy up, and then he realised, boy.
Okay, one more for you. I woke up this morning. I live a very boring life, as you know, Nathan. But this morning, fresh sourdough, thickly spread with peanut butter. To me, one of the great joys in life, fresh bread with peanut butter on it. For you, Nath, finish this sentence. One of the great joys in life is...
Mine's the same sort of thing as you. The breakfast buffet at a hotel overseas, like in Fiji or something, is you've got the omelettes, you've got the pancakes, you can go and get bacon if you want, then you've got coffee, you've got all sorts of things. So, and then everything's cleaned up for you. You don't have to do anything. Someone else cleans it up for you, but breakfast buffet for me.
Clarkie, one of the great joys in life for you is?
Piggyback rides. Always good. The piggyback rides up and down the hallway of our house, pretty sort of daily occurrence. I always end up laughing.
Fantastic. Piggyback rides, a breakfast buffet. Ross, you look like you could handle a breakfast buffet.
Yeah. A Vegas buffet. You can't beat a Vegas.
No. Great joys in life for you is?
Room service.
Room service. Mm. Yeah, that is
at
nice.
Any time, 24 hour.
Yeah, now, some have had joy in life. Others have had a great deal of joy. And others have had a lot of joy. So I look to you, Duck. I'm not sure where this
is
going.
I'm actually not going to be that entertaining. I'm going to be a little bit soppy.
Oh, good.
To me, honestly, the joy of when your kids come up and give you a cuddle or a kiss.
Oh,
like at the moment now, when you walk out the door, little Carter runs up and he cries when I leave. And I know he's sad, but I'm happy that he's crying because I'm leaving. That's right now. That's the great joke.
But after hours, Duck, if you had a
no, that's not what this segment is about.
Kicked along the ground, back in front of Ed. He's run into the forward pocket. Kicked the goal, Ed, in game 150. He has.
Curto hits 35, takes a bounce. Kicked the goal, Ed, but it does. Lose two in a minute.
Curnow quickly on the move, bouncing ball, got another one.
Wow.
Terrific goal.
Gets to the back, here's Curto. Dribbling. Oh! Wonderful stuff.
Oh, the Blues are back in business. Nice win over the Cats last night down at Geelong in a big upset. And this man, effective as always, Ed Curnow, joins on the line. G'day, Ed.
G'day, Howie. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, great to speak to you. The Blues, the Navy Blues have had a win, mate. It was tight in the end, but by gee, there's a Blues supporter at my house. There's some excitement amongst the faithful.
Yeah, it was a bit too close at the end. It was great to get the win in Geelong. It was, I still can't believe it, to be honest, mate.
It got so tight, didn't it? Did they improve what they were doing? Did you guys drop off a bit? What happened in that closing stages?
Yeah, they played a high-risk style of footy. I even heard at one stage they were yelling at each other, don't tackle them. They just didn't want any congestion. They wanted the ball out in space and they were running and gunning and, you know, their superstars got going for them. We knew they were going to come hard at us and we just hang on.
But you know what? You know who you've got. You've got Eddie Betts. You've got Eddie Betts, Ed. How good was he last night?
He's great. He's just, he's loved by the group. So to have someone like that playing and then that's so talented, he can turn a game in a couple of minutes. So he was able to lay a couple of tackles and kick his goals, and the guys love playing with him.
What about the form of Pitney? Came into the side. Obviously, you have Cruiser go down. You need a ruckman, and he has stood up again last night, 36 hitouts to 19, and I thought he was the dominant big man on the ground.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear the stats. I didn't know his stats. He's just he fires himself up. He knows what he needs to do to play well and get his job done. So He brings a lot of energy to the group and aggression around the stoppages, and that's his go. And he's come into the side and done that. Good on him after coming across from Hawthorn.
My word, Ed. We're tight for time. I know you've got things to do rather than speak to us, mate. Well done to the Blues, mate. There'll be plenty more wins on the way.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Our next guest is a much-loved figure in this building. His name is Ben Amafio. He used to run Triple M. He gave a lot of his jobs here, Duck, you and me included. He then went to CA and negotiated a massive bumper record deal for the Cricketers as far as the broadcast rights go. And he is now the CEO of the North Melbourne Football Club. But he's probably not here for those reasons today after Ben took a really courageous decision yesterday to be quoted in an article called Amafio's Punch to the Gut. It was related to Black Lives, Benny. I think it'd be fair to say racism you've experienced in your life. Those that don't know Ben, he is a wonderful man of Ghanaian and Armenian descent, which is quite a mix. Benny, we appreciate you joining us. I'm not sure if you quite know how to handle this. We've had a chat on the phone. I don't really know how to handle it either, mate, but it is great to see you back at Triple M firstly.
Thanks, Howie. Nice to be here.
The article yesterday, before we get too far into it and some of the experiences you've had, what has been the response like for the last 24 hours, mate? And it was gut-wrenching to read.
It was gut-wrenching to do.
I bet.
But yeah, it's been a couple of days now, so I think it was Friday that it went online, and as soon as it went online, the phone started to go. So it's been 2 days. It's been pretty full on, And I hadn't shared a lot of that with even my closest friends and even members of my own family. So some of it came as a bit of a surprise and a shock to some people. And, you know, some of my mates were like, shit, why didn't you tell us? Sorry, I shouldn't swear. Why didn't you tell us? We would have supported you and all the rest of it. But you don't want to because it hurts to relive it. And obviously you don't want to, you know, put people offside, and you don't want to embarrass people. So you obviously want to protect people sometimes too, because it can be pretty damaging to someone's character and someone's reputation if they get outed as a racist. So you're always very careful about that too.
So 48 hours after, Benny, how has it been therapeutic for you? Do you feel better having got it off your chest? Or
Yeah, I do, Duck. I feel better for having shared it, and I'm pleased that so many people have said this will help with black people and white people, and people who congratulated me about my courage. I don't see it as courageous. I was exposing myself, absolutely, but I don't see myself as courageous. But the reaction that I've got has certainly been just waves and waves of love, which is great. But and that's all good for me. I worry about kids going through it. You've got a couple of beautiful kids, Howie, and you've all got kids. And if you could think of yourself and think of your kids in that situation, and as a parent, all you ever want your kids is your kids to be happy and healthy and to be embraced by their mates and to be included and not ostracised. And so I don't want that, whether it's black kids, Indigenous kids, Jewish kids, Muslim kids, I don't want any kids ostracised. And that's the thing that hurts the most, I think.
Benny, the article, you brought up certain instances way back to the age of six. You brought up instances on the footy field. Yeah. You brought up instances where you're just going to buy a sandwich at the shop. I can only imagine how, well, I can't imagine. This is what, we don't know what to say in this situation. I can't imagine how painful it must be to take yourself back to those times. And that's why I use the word courageous, because I imagine it was really difficult to take yourself back to places you probably never want to go back to.
True, but you get reminded pretty regularly.
Do you?
Yeah, of course. You know, you only have to be, and it's not just me. It's not my experience. I mean, a lot of people have experienced the same sort of thing. You'll be on a train or a tram and it'll be chockers, right? But you'll find a seat, and there might be a spare seat, and you'll take that seat, and there'll be spare seats around you, and it might be quite crowded elsewhere, and people will come on, and they'll look at you up and look at you up and down, and they won't sit next to you. They won't sit next to the black person or someone who looks odd or different to them. A lot of the times that'll happen, and that happens to, you know, as an adult. So it goes on, and it's still around, and people deal with this every day, and all I'm saying is that, look, forget about the skin colour, you know, forget about that, because, and that's what we were trying to convey in our mission statement as well, about our blood and our hearts and our minds and our feelings. We're all the same, you know, we're all God's children. And I'm not even that religious, but it's just the veneer underneath. We're all exactly the same, and we should treat each other as such, you know. And I get, it's funny because the whole Black Lives Matter thing, people get a bit cranky about that. You know, they'll say, oh, but, you know, white lives matter too, or all lives matter. And that statement isn't trying to say that all lives don't matter. It's just saying right now, here, where we are today, given what's going on in the world today, we just want to acknowledge that black lives matter too, or black lives matter as much. Not more, not differently, just as much. We're just trying to get to as much.
We're speaking to Benny Amafio, the CEO of the North Melbourne Football Club. Not that you're here in that role today, Benny. It's interesting with the whole Black Lives Matter, because I'm old enough to remember Rodney King and the riots that caused, and now what's happened in the States in the last 3 weeks. And you sort of look back at it and think, has anything actually really changed?
Well, it is sad. And I mean, Rodney King, what was that, 96?
Yeah.
So I think around about there, it was late 90s. So it's over 20 years. And that was sort of concentrated to LA, we didn't see what we've seen this time, where we've seen spot fires,
yep.
Poor pun, but we've seen protests and agitation all throughout, you know, maybe 30 different cities across America, whereas with Rodney King, at least it was sort of restricted to LA, and it was brutal. I mean, they burned 100 buildings. Mm. So we haven't, it hasn't been as intense this time, but it's been far more, far wider, and it's gone beyond the United States to, you know, people protesting here in Melbourne and London and Copenhagen and all around the world.
Which and does that help? Does this awareness, like, where do we have to go from being aware to changing, Benny? Like, the awareness has been enormous around the world for the last 3 weeks, but you read your article yesterday and it's like, well, there's awareness, but what are we doing to fix it?
Well, it's such a hard thing to fix because yeah. You're like, how do you, what's the problem first? And I tried to sort of get across the point that I think, and this is only my own personal opinion, I think a lot of it is from fear, ignorance, and familiarity. So, you know, if you look at that experience that I had when I was in grade one, Mooney Pond Central, that was only because the other kids had never experienced that before. There's 1,000 kids in that school. There was only one other black kid in the school.
Right.
And that was my sister. So they just hadn't encountered that before. So it was, they didn't know any different. You know, they just see these strange looking kids and they're like, you know, what's this all about? So they would tease and pick on and ostracize and belt and all that sort of stuff. But as soon as they get to know you, then it breaks everything down. And as I said, the kid that was my worst tormentor in that situation ended up being my best friend all through primary school. And it's only because they got to know me. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing often is the case is once you get to know someone who's very different to you and you experience that, oh, they've got a family just like mine. They've got hopes and dreams just like mine. They've got pets just like mine. They play sport. They play footy and cricket just like I do. And they go, all of a sudden that little Muslim kid or that Jewish kid is just another kid who's my friend as opposed to the label that they've put on that kid.
Ben, you talk about in that article that the next kid next to you when you're playing footy wouldn't drink out of the same bottle as you, and then you read that and I read it and I think, how does that sort of stuff go on? And then I try and explain to my kids what's going on in the world at the moment and they can't understand it. And then I hear you say before that you're even your best mates didn't understand. I've known you for years and I wouldn't have known that. And it's almost like we're uneducated about what's happened. Like, it's just, it's mind-boggling that these sort of things still go on. And I mean, I was almost in tears reading that about you. I've known for many years.
So I don't know. It was funny because I've had a couple of my footy, I mean, those are still my best mates, my junior footy mates from Mooney Valley. And a couple of them knew exactly what was going on and they were very protective of me. And these are Greeks and Italians and Turks and Lebanese kids. So we're all a real melting pot as well. And they said, one of them said to me the other day, he said, it wasn't just the other sides, mate, that gave you shit. It was, we had it at our own club. He said, we just tried to protect you from it. So we had supporters and people at my own club that had an issue with my colour. And they go, okay, well, I didn't know much about that because they protected me from it. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just I think it is getting better. I think I love what the AFL has done and I love the awareness that it's got. You know, how you talk about the awareness. I love that we're all talking about it and having a discussion about it because we need to have discussions like this and about many other things, gender equity and,
yep.
You know, same-sex marriage, all of that sort of stuff. It's great that, you know, we're evolving as a society and as a community.
Benny, have you had anyone reach out that may or thought they may have offended you from way back? Have you had anyone?
Yeah. Close mate of mine who you all know and love reached out who's got very a big character reached out and apologised because he often jokes about it and picks on me and all that sort of stuff. But and I've always copped it from him and I don't mind it, and which sounds hypocritical from him because I know that he loves me and I've known him for 25 years and we are very, very tight. I know his wife and I've you know, his sons, and I mean, they're beautiful people, and I know there's nothing but love there. So, and I'm not encouraging people and saying it's okay, you're a free pass, but there is different types. You know, I know the difference when it's a mate, when it's coming from a place of love, and where it's coming from a place of division, but or labelling.
Is it fair to say, Ben, that even though they're trying to be humorous, that the ambiguity in that is very confusing?
Yeah.
And this is a guy that says loves you.
Yeah.
But even with that relationship, you just still didn't feel comfortable to put on the table with him and...
No, look, I mean, I might have called him on it, and others certainly have called him on it. But you know what? I've got to say that we're that close, and I do love him, and I know he loves me, so that I'm cool with it. I am. And I know that sounds hypocritical, but I'm okay with it.
In terms of a one-on-one conversation, but in public, it's the wrong message, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because others hear.
Yeah, totally.
Hear it.
Benny.
Totally. You're right.
Mm.
For those people that are listening that are trying to understand the effect that it is going to have on anyone, how does it make you feel when you're racially abused?
Oh, you're getting sensitive now. look, it really depends on the situation, Howie. You know, and I'm always careful. If I'm walking around at night and there's drunks, you'll usually cop it from drunks because they're drunk and their filters are down. And so you'll cross the street because you don't want to get into a Barney. Because, I mean, if someone starts, and I'm for the most part, I'm a bit of a teddy bear, but I've got a bit of a temper. I get that from my father, and I would love to. I box a lot, and I know if I got into a situation and someone triggered me, I'd love to do something that I would regret. So I just avoid. So you just try and avoid situations where you think it's going to happen. And then other times when it's casual, and I gave a couple of examples, and I've got 100 other examples too of casual racism that happens every day, you can't avoid it. I mean, you're going about your normal business, and then you see something, you go, oh, really? Really? You know, we're still like that?
Just hearing that makes me terribly sad. That you have to avoid situations. It just makes you sad even hearing that.
Yeah. Well, I just sometimes I don't trust myself, Wayne. So I've got to sort of remove yourself from a situation. And as I say, it's usually in those situations, it's people who've had a lot to drink, and you can see they're starting to get a bit. And that's happened a couple of times. Now they'll start to. You'll start to hear it, and they'll start, and it just gets bigger and better, and you ignore it, and then they have another crack because they want to get a rise out of you. So then you just better.
So Benny. Ben, on a broader term, so the one knee and enormous awareness, and there's a real platform, but it's very symbolic. So what we don't want those people that go to the process, drop the knee, then they go home, and then not act.
Yeah.
So if you could implore people to do one thing, or you could drive through one program through the community, or have you had a thought on that could create a bit more change and deliver?
I think what you're doing here today is great. You know, it's because you're not being passive, and you've reached out to me, and you know, Harry and I exchanged messages this morning, and you want to change, you want to affect change, and I think, and I've said this a few times, it's better coming from white people, because coming from black people, it sounds self-serving. So when it's coming from white people, I'm not trying to create division there when I say that, but it has so much more impact coming from white people, when white people stand up and say, you know what, this is not good enough and this has to change, and we're all the same. We're all brothers and sisters. Forget about the colour.
So the message I've got from all this is not to stay silent. So absolutely people like right. us, like white guys who are middle-aged, who stay silent, and there's been studies of even physical abusers, they don't so much dislike the physical abuser as much as the person that saw it and stayed silent at the same time.
Yeah, totally. You're 100% right. When if I could put a label on it, when the white establishment says this is not good enough, then people will really listen. And we can hopefully affect some change that way. So, yeah.
Benny, you understand the constraints of commercial radio.
Yeah, we've got to get to a break.
We've got to get to a game of football. We've got to get to a game of football. There's nothing we can say except to say thanks for coming in and having a chat with us and educating us. And there's a lot of love for you in this room and around this town. You're a good man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks,
Benny.
Ben.
Thanks, Doc.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks footy.